I'm not saying that good things don't happen in the adversary system. Of course they do, and of course it's better for them to make the decisions even under pressure than to have a stranger make the decisions for them. So it's really a kind of self-destruct act to have a judge make a decision for the most intimate decisions people are going to make. Our aspiration is for something that feels quite different, and where people will feel like they can look back on not just the marriage, but be proud of how they behaved during the divorce, and that understanding-based mediation gave them a chance to do that.
The Center for Understanding and Conflict welcomes you to The Other Chair, a monthly podcast exploring the dynamics of conflict and how to bring the human issues to the table. Together with our guests, we explore how the power of understanding each other can lead to better solutions for people on both sides of an issue. We will also share tips for managing your own mediation practice, approaching conflict in the professional world, and ways to apply our understanding-based model in your personal life. Hello to our listeners, and welcome to The Other Chair. My name is James Dighton. Today's guest is Gary Friedman, author, mediator, and co-founder of the Center for Understanding and Conflict, a nonprofit educational institute dedicated to advancing the understanding-based approach to conflict resolution and mediation. In this episode of The Other Chair, Gary joins us to discuss the nuance of understanding-based divorce mediation and the human challenges faced by the mediator and parties that may be unique to other forms of conflict. Hello, Gary, and welcome back to The Other Chair.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me do this.
Thank you. Thank you for always making the time. I think, you know, we've been doing this podcast for almost a year and a half now, and you're probably come on every other episode. So thank you always for making the time in your busy schedule.
As much as you want, I'm happy to do it.
All right, everyone. So every month, Gary Friedman will be our co-host on. No, I'm just kidding. All right, well, we're here today to talk about matrimonial mediation or divorce mediation, and what that experience is like, because there's a lot of different types of conflicts that mediators address, and divorce is a common one, but not one that all practitioners get involved in. And so I thought it would be great to talk about what that experience is like. And so let's start off, maybe share with us a little bit about what understanding-based divorce mediation is and how it differs from traditional legal approaches to divorce.
You know, it's interesting because there's when we talk about mediation and we talk about understanding-based mediation, they're really two different animals than what's now become traditional divorce mediation. So traditional divorce mediation is more like settlement conference, where the parties talk to the mediator, and the mediator meets separately with each party. And then carries messages back and forth and brings things to a close in that way. In understanding-based mediation, the goal really is to put the people in charge who are divorcing of the decisions together. And in some ways, it's ironic that, you know, having gone through whatever they've gone through to reach the point of deciding they want to get divorced, we're now asking them to come together to make those decisions. But in fact, it really makes most sense that it be they that are making these decisions rather than somebody, a stranger, making these decisions for them, or even having a stranger mediator in a more traditional divorce mediation setting. Play a really large role in influencing and determining what the outcome should be. So this is really reserving to the people who created the marriage, who know best what happened in the marriage, who understand best what happened that led to the divorce, that are now going to have to figure out how to manage their lives after the divorce, and particularly if they have kids, their kids' lives as well as their own. And so this is really what understanding-based mediation is really all about. It's not about the mediator telling people what to do. It's about the mediator helping the people come together and go through their differences, not duck them, but go through them in order to be able to make these decisions together.
It sounds like a really great idea, but I think especially for those that haven't been involved in mediating divorces or even working with divorces. I think in popular media, you look at two people are in a divorce, they can't stand each other, they don't want to talk to each other. Their attorneys do the talking for them. If they're somehow forced into the same room together when they're getting ready to sign off an agreement, the lawyers are doing all the talking. So what is the, how does that look like in practice? Because I think it might sound to a lot of people like a tall order to get these two individuals together to come to an agreement when, you know, coming together is probably what they've been struggling with and the fact that they're getting divorced. So.
Yeah, it is a tall order. And it takes courage for people to do this. And they have to kind of find a way to kind of get bigger than the bad feelings that they have about each other or bad feelings about what happened in the marriage. And so this is a time for them to realize that, in fact, it might be very uncomfortable. It will be very uncomfortable to be making these decisions together. But who better than they to be doing that? And the question is not so much whether they know how to do that. That's what they need the mediator for. The question is whether they would like to be able to do that. And, you know, there's, it's kind of part of the mythology, people divorcing, you're supposed to hate each other. And so this is really a chance for them to realize that as bad, whatever the bad feelings they have toward each other, there's a larger context, a context in which presumably at least they once loved each other. They may still love each other. But more importantly, they're the ones that have the best shot at kind of seeing if they can solve the problem of how their lives can go forward separately rather than as a family unit.
How do you overcome the emotional dynamics that come into play if you, you know, have a couple who's going through a divorce and they've decided, they've willingly chosen to explore understanding-based mediation as an alternative? What is that like in the mediation room? What sort of emotions are coming up, and how does a mediator work through that to keep people working together towards an outcome?
Yeah, I mean, the feelings they have, the bad feelings they have toward each other, it's inevitable that they have some. And if they don't, I worry a lot about that, worry more about that, that they'll avoid having the conflict. But the idea is for them to realize that if they're in conflict with each other, that there's a path through that conflict if they want to take that path. And that's what the mediator's job is to do, to help them do that. So we don't ask them to suppress the bad feelings. Actually, we encourage them to have the bad feelings and as necessary to even express the bad feelings. So anger, fear, sense of betrayal, all the things that are part of coming apart and people struggling to kind of figure out how to make their lives go on after the, which is often a trauma of a separation. That's all part of the woodwork. That's all part of the what they need to be able to have access to, express, and then get help from the outside to be able to go through to really create understanding between them. And understanding and agreement are two different things. So to be able to understand what happened, understand each other, recognize they have two different perspectives, at least. And those perspectives, if understood, and understood in a deep enough way to really capture the core of what's really most important to each of them going forward in their lives, that's really what this is about. And, you know, it's hard because they're often going through, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. I'm in total chaos. I don't really have, no, I don't even know how to pick up the pieces. And so it's about giving them the time and the rhythm of going through this in a way so that they can go through this in their own time, in their own way, in a way that really respects each of them individually and what they put together in their marriage. And if it's kids too as well, it's all part of what they did, that it's not all bad. And so this is really a big challenge, and they have to, and if they want to do it, It's really great. If they don't want to do it, or if one of them wants to and the other doesn't, it's not the right way to go.
Conflict manifests itself in many ways in our personal lives, for professionals in the workplace and for practitioners who have made a career bringing together parties in conflict through mediation practice. Each month, the Center for Understanding and Conflict hosts live webinars with featured guests discussing best practices and sharing their experiences for tackling conflict using the understanding-based model. Is divorce mediation particularly emotional or highly charged compared to other conflict scenarios, or are those tensions generally the same because people are personally involved in the conflict, whether it's a property dispute versus the ending
that's
of the marriage?
That's a great question. Most people feel like divorce mediation, that's where it's really, really heavy. All the really bad feelings, strongest feelings people have, having been in an intimate relationship. It's much harder. The reality is, I think it's the same. Some people are as attached to their business, or may be more attached to their business than they are to their relationships. And so when people have things that are really close to their hearts, are really important to them, that are part of the dispute, doesn't matter whether it's a marriage or a business or a real estate or whatever it is, that's what inflames them and scares them, and also is the key to being understood, to be able to help them understand them, express them, and then be able to move through them.
What is that process like for the mediator? I mean, here you are asking, two individuals in a relationship that's coming to an end to go beneath the surface and really confront and explore those difficult emotions. And then here you are sitting in the other chair in between them. What is that like for mediators, and what sort of tools does the understanding-based model equip them with to not be crippled by it?
Yeah, no, I think this is a very big, important question. And a lot of people shy away from doing divorce mediation because they feel like it's too raw for them to be there and to witness conflict, because it brings up too much in them and they don't want to experience, as they need to, the level of depth of pain and anger and upset that's part of it. So you have to have a good reason to want to do this as a mediator. And if you don't have a good reason to want to do this as a mediator, you shouldn't do it. And the reasons can be, there's an opportunity. And this is why I have to say, of all the mediations I do, I love divorce mediation the most. Why? Because what could be more important than to help people go through this kind of often tragedy of a divorce and help them be able to reestablish their lives? So feeling that motivation, having that inside, and loving them, and loving the conflict, and realizing that this is a chance for them to be able to have conversations they maybe never have been able to have with each other their whole lives, and now they're at this, and it's the irony of this, they're at this point of saying goodbye, to be able to really find out what actually happened and what's going to happen and what's happening now. Is an incredible privilege for me as a mediator, and for anybody as a mediator, for us to be able to witness conversations that are real and conversations that are painful and conversations that can lead to healing.
What is an example of I don't know if bad's the right word, but you mentioned some of the good reasons to be in the other chair. What are some of the less ideal reasons for a mediator or conflict resolution practitioner to be there that could get in the way, or what makes that not the best choice?
Well, of course, it's very hard. Anytime people are really upset with each other, we're sitting between them, often we're kind of pulled toward one or against the other. And we have to work within ourselves to not let that get in the way of our being there for both people. Our commitment to them as a neutral is not to be distant and removed, but to be there with them and to be there for each of them and for both of them. And this is why we think it's so important that we all stay in the same room together. They get to see how it is we move closer to the other person And this is really the I think some ways I don't like to think of it as the magic of mediation, but it's really important lesson for people to realize that because most people are so caught up in one person's right and the other person's wrong, and when they see the mediator connect emotionally to the other person, and then they see the mediator connect to them emotionally, they have framed the problem as only one of us can be right. How is it that this person can connect to both of us at the same time when only one of us can be right? And this is where the moment of expansion is most powerful, to be able to see, oh, this is the right wrong framework doesn't hold this. It's too small. There's something bigger. And I think the right wrong framework is so deeply ingrained in all of us that it just kind of seizes us and limits us and actually makes us smaller than we can be if we can get beyond the right wrong framework and see, yes, there's a bigger reality here than whatever it is that we would decide one of us is right, the other's wrong.
Over the course of your long and storied career, I'm sure that you have had a lot of these divorce mediation cases that have come your way. And
Thousands.
would it be possible to discuss, did you say thousands?
Yeah.
How are you holding up after thousands of
Well, no, it's amazing. I love it more now than I ever did. And that's also, I think I've also learned that I know less than I thought I knew when I started. And that's good. So it's been a tremendous lesson in humility and to keep me honest. And so I find it incredibly exhilarating, especially when I can help people come together. And even when I can't, to feel like I'm giving it my absolute best to try to be able to be there for them, to be able to help them go through this.
do you have a case that comes to mind that was particularly complex or challenging, where you really had to work at bringing the parties together to find that common ground?
Oh, there's one I had recently. Many of them stick in my mind. I actually wrote a book called A Guide to Divorce Mediation, where I describe 12 different cases and what we all went through in this guy. But here's one that's with me at the moment. And this was a couple that had been married, oh, I think maybe 15 years. They had a 12-year-old son. They were both from one of them was from another country. The other was American. And the wife had a huge amount of money and an inheritance. And the husband did not, he came from modest means. And so she was there and had kind of pulled all the strings and they and bought this house where he had poured his soul into making the house the beautiful family home that he wanted it to be. And so they were really, really upset about what was going to happen with the house. He couldn't stand the idea that she would have the house, and it also meant to him that she would also have the kid. And they both loved their child, and their child loved both of them. But they had a horrible history of just fighting with each other, and they just couldn't stop. It was every time one of them said one thing, the other would contradict it, and he was trying to kind of get out from under her thumb. She was filled with rage at the unfulfilled promise of what she thought the marriage would be, and she blamed him entirely for that. So they were really caught in this place where they went round and round and angry with each other, and she was ready to spend millions to unhook from him because she really, it wasn't the money for her that was so important. She wanted to be sure he didn't come out of it a wealthy person. He, of course, was so resentful that she had so much money that she had the ability to be able to make his life work. But she wouldn't part with the money and she wanted to be in control. So they had a dynamic that was, or he just felt impotent, and she just felt that a kind of endless rage toward him.
Throughout the year, the Center for Understanding and Conflict hosts in-depth, basic, and advanced certificate programs designed to train you to become effective mediators and conflict resolution professionals centered in the understanding-based model. Our training programs have been the gold standard in alternative dispute resolution for 40 years and is popular within the legal community, with human resource professionals, ombudsmen, and corporate workplace mediation clients.
So that was their dynamic, and it really was. I think it was a couple of years of meeting with them over time, and each time trying to see if I could use the tools of understanding-based mediation to be able to kind of help them move closer toward each other. And those tools are really important. It's really, we call understanding-based mediation because understanding is at the heart of it. Could they understand each other even though they saw things differently? Could they see that from the other person's perspective, that how it looked? And they would we would go through that where each of them would actually they'd come very close, and then there would be huge backlash after they had done that, and they would kind of retreat to their corners, and a couple of months later come back, same place they were in before. And the smallest little thing would each set them off, because actually what we really got to is at the base of it all, they really had loved each other, and they really loved their child, and their child loved them, and they both knew their child loved them, and they both knew that if there was a bad feeling between them, that it could really disrupt their precious child's life. And so they had to kind of get bigger than the bad feelings that they had about each other. And that was the challenge. And so it was very, very, she kept threatening to go to a lawyer. She had hired a trial lawyer who was just couldn't wait to get into the case. And she kept saying she was going to use the trial lawyer, and he kept getting scared. So it was very, very challenging to kind of keep the mediation was always on the edge of falling out, and threats by each of them. And of course, his was in some ways it was an empty threat, because the court reality for him was going to be terrible. So he would have to depend on her generosity, and her friends kept telling her what a sucker she was to try to be generous to him, when in fact she felt that he'd wronged her. So she kind of had to fight with herself and her friends and her family, to be able to find some place where she realized that there's some bigger picture here, and it had to do with her love for her son, and also her respect for herself to the fact that she had loved him and she had chosen him, and even though it hadn't worked out, to be able to do that. And for him to be able to rise to the occasion of not feeling like a victim, and to be able to assert himself and to speak up for himself and to hang in there, knowing that the reality was, in an adversary system, he would be pummeled, and come out with in a situation where he actually would not even. He would be w much worse financially, but worse than that is that he would not get the benefit of this house that he loved. And he would feel every time he came to that house, it would be just rubbing salt in the wound. So there was a lot of stuff that they had to go through, but they finally managed to go through it, with support of their lawyers, by the way. And there was a moment when she kept making proposals, and then he would say no, and then she'd make another proposal, and then he'd come back, and they were very far apart. And then they started to move closer to each other, and as they got to the end of it, she couldn't stop herself. She had to keep making proposals. She made another proposal that was more generous to him. And he would not really respond to it. And he just was kind of paralyzed. So there was a this was a back and forth by email. The lawyers were beside themselves trying to help the clients. And so at one point the email with the question is what could they do? And so he wrote something that he thought he might be willing to agree to, but he wouldn't call it anything other than he wouldn't commit to it. So they were on the edge of quitting, and they turned to me, and I said to him, make it a proposal. And those four words turned the whole mediation. He did. It was an incredible relief. She finally knew where he stood and what he would say yes to. And so they finally were able to do it. And through tremendous agony, they finally came together, and it was a tremendous relief for both of them.
Thank you for sharing that. And I think it's important to note to those who are listening who may not be familiar with the understanding-based approach, that parties in conflict, when they work with an understanding-based mediator, they proceed by agreement, right? And so even though this was a really long drawn-out process and a lot of animus at certain points, during the whole process, they were both continuing to still show up and still participate. And at any moment, they weren't bound. By doing that, they could have decided to quit, but there was a part of them that wanted to keep exploring the possibility of finding a solution outside of the courts. Would that be a fair characterization?
Yeah, and you know, people go through, you know, the course of going through a divorce is a huge, it's a ups and downs and, you know, peaks and valleys, and sometimes they don't, they wake up and they're just overcome and can't do anything. Other days, it's like they want to get it over within the next minute, and so they have to kind of go through whatever they're going through as they the emotional roller coaster to reach some point where they finally say, yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to get this done. And that took quite a while for them. It takes quite a while for lots of people to go through it. A friend of mine used to say, usually takes about half the number of years for people that were married to be able to kind of come to terms with what happened.
So is it common to be as a mediator or conflict resolution practitioner, is it common to be involved in a divorce mediation for, what could be several years?
Rarely, but usually, you know, within 6 months or so, or 6 months to a year, that's typically what it takes in terms of the amount of time for them to be able to make decisions. After all, they're facing huge decisions: where they're going to live, how they're, if they have kids, how they're going to parent, what they're going to do with their lives. Whether so, they've got a lot of stuff. There's not any part of their life that's not impacted by going through a divorce. So there's a lot of kind of pulling together. What am I going to do now with my life now that I don't have this familiar experience of, you know, knowing what's going to happen each day, and how I'm going to be relating to each other, how they're going to relate to each other.
This podcast is supported by our CUC Connect members, whose yearly membership includes free attendance to our live monthly webinars, 12 additional featured recordings of past training events, and support from our network of certified trainers for continued professional development. Consider joining CUC Connect today and dive deeper into the understanding-based model. You mentioned children. Not everyone has kids, but many people do. And what is it like in an understanding-based mediation in divorce around children and preserving relationships, or does the child have a voice in this process directly, or where do they come into play in this mediation approach?
Yeah, first I'd like to kill a myth. A myth is that if you have children, that you really should mediate, and if you don't have children, you don't need to think about it. But in fact, The not having children is not a barrier. There are really good reasons that people have of wanting to come, trying to understand what happened in this relationship. They're going through it with together with this other person who has the best understanding, at least outside of themselves, about what happened. Is it can be enormously valuable for people who have kids. It's obvious that for anybody who's ever experienced it, if they experienced it with their parents, and many people come to mediation who have kids whose parents and who the parents themselves had their parents were divorced, so they know as a kid what that was like to have their parents divorced, and they realize how much they suffered, and that's enormously valuable for them to realize that beyond right and wrong, this question of trying to help make life safe for their kids and to preserve at least some cordiality and mutual respect is really important. So mediation is an obvious place to go rather than to turn that over to people from the outside. And depending on the age of the kids and the desire of the parties, sometimes their kids participate, and they certainly, I often encourage them if they can, to have conversations, even just announcing the divorce or the separation. If they can have that conversation together with the child and reassure the child or the children that of their love for the children and that this is not about the children. That really is a very important message for the kids to hear, because so many kids, especially around certain tender ages, feel like it's their fault if their parents got divorced, and that's a horrible scar to carry forward. So for the parents to be able to show the kids that in fact they're there for the kids, that it's not about what the kids did wrong. The kids didn't do anything wrong. They just got born, and the parents couldn't work out living together, but they probably still love each other, and they at one point they did love each other. And so to be able to have those intimate conversations with their children, sometimes in mediation, sometimes not, but not play out all the bad feelings that they have about trying to blame the other person for the failure of the marriage. And I think it's really important not to just see a divorce is a failure. I don't want to make too much of a point of it, but it's actually a time for people to be able to kind of reclaim their lives and find lives that are more fulfilling than when they were together. So many people look back on that as a big turning point in their lives when they found something that was really important for them, that was really valuable. And don't just kind of carry all the terrible wounds of feeling like they've been betrayed or not respected or all the things that humans can do to each other.
In the United States, I believe we're still at, one in two marriages end in divorce. How common is it for couples who are looking at separation or ending a marriage to seek mediation, and how do they find out about it? Is it recommended by attorneys or the courts, or do they just have to luck upon it as an alternative?
Yeah, well, things have evolved a lot in the 40s. I think it's 48 years now since I've been doing this. At the beginning, lawyers told people, don't go to mediation. It's illegal. And then that evolved, and the courts then got involved, interested in mediation. And then they tried to turn it into a kind of familiar thing for lawyers, where the lawyers still dominated and there are these separate sessions. So divorce mediation became mandatory for custody situations. But it was a very different animal than the understanding-based mediation. And it still is. And it's still the dominant way in which people go through mediation that we call it kind of the settlement conference model of mediation. But so if you're it's mandatory To go through mediation if you have a custody problem, at least in California and many other states. And of course, in some ways, it just feels like an oxymoron, to just be able to say, okay, now, you have a chance to make these decisions together. You shall do this. And the court system functions through coercion. It's just the opposite of understanding. So there's a lot of stuff, and it kind of works because for a lot of people it's less horrible than having a judge make a decision for them. They at least got to have some chance to talk to each other. But it shouldn't be confused with the kind of mediation that we're talking about, where it's a very different kind of opportunity for people to feel empowered rather than made small. And so lawyers don't dominate in the understanding-based model of mediation, and a judge is in the background, not the foreground. But the law is still something that gets talked about and taken into account. So people are always thinking when they're in mediation, what will happen if we don't work this out? And having that information available to them puts them in a position to be able to make a decision where they make decisions that hopefully are better for both of them than if they were to go to court. So, to say so many people's experience of mediation is of coercion, and are the understanding-based model, we're a very important alternative, but never have been, aren't, and will never be the most popular alternative, but it's real, and it really makes a difference in people's lives. So when you kind of look at the divorcing population, you would say it was a pretty small sample that went through understanding-based mediation. But for those who did and did that successfully, it's a game changer. And so I think that I'm not saying that good things don't happen in the adversary system. Of course they do. And of course it's better for them to make the decisions even under pressure than to have a stranger make the decisions for them. So it's really a kind of self-destruct act to have a judge make a decision for the most intimate decisions people are going to make. But our aspiration is for something that feels quite different, and where people will feel like they can look back on not just the marriage, but be proud of how they behaved during the divorce, and that understanding-based mediation gave them a chance to do that.
Thank you so much, Gary, for being here today, as always, to talk about the opportunities and challenges of understanding-based matrimonial or divorce mediation, and for everything else you do to support the conflict resolution community through your teaching. So thank you so much.
Thanks, James.
Gary Friedman is a pioneer in the field of conflict resolution and mediation and co-author of Challenging Conflict, Mediation Through Understanding. If you would like to learn more about the understanding-based approach or matrimonial mediation training opportunities, please visit www.understandinginconflict.org. Thank you to today's guest for being with us today, and to our CUC Connect members, whose support enables the Center for Understanding and Conflict to bring new perspectives in the field of conflict resolution and mediation to you, our listener, in each new episode. You can find out more about today's episode, along with full interviews and additional information about conflict resolution and mediation using the understanding-based model at www.understandinginconflict.org.